Imagine a world where lighting a match isn't just a utility, it's a capital offense.
Okay.
You're living in a society where the elements fire, ice, thunder are all outlawed. If you wield them, you're a criminal.
Right.
Now, drop a protagonist into that world who has fire, literally running through her veins, a massive sword, and a really personal grudge against the gods themselves.
That is a striking premise for a Monday morning, isn't
It certainly wakes you up.
it?
Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we are digging into Emberbane, an indie title from the studio Hamboo. And the mission for today is pretty specific. We've got a stack of reviews and guides here, and we're trying to answer one big question. How did a small team, with a limited budget, pull off what our sources are calling a modern masterpiece?
Well, that word masterpiece, it gets thrown around a lot. It's easy to be skeptical.
It is, but the consensus here seems to be that Emberbane pulls it off not with like 4K graphics or a huge marketing spend, but with soul and creativity.
Doing more with less.
Exactly.
And the context here is everything. The design docs, they pitch Emberbane as a love letter to the golden age of action games. But, and this is the key bit, it's a love letter written for the 2026 gamer.
Meaning what exactly? Because when I hear love letter to the golden age, my mind immediately goes to like clunky controls and unfair difficulty spikes.
And that's the trap, right? But here, it means respecting your time. It strips away all that old friction while keeping the challenge. It's nostalgia, but without the frustration. It knows you probably have a job and don't have 40 hours to grind.
I really want to get into the nuts and bolts of that, especially the game feel stuff. But we have to start with the story. The revenge plot. It feels smaller than the usual save the universe thing.
Smaller, but much sharper. You place Kate, a swordswoman, an outlaw. But she isn't trying to save the world. She's trying to kill the false gods who claim to be protecting it.
Because they killed her family. It's a classic motivation, but it works.
It's deeply personal, and the storytelling reflects that. The reviews point out that it avoids the two biggest narrative traps in modern gaming.
Which are?
It's not super vague and obscure like a Dark Souls game where you need to read 50 item descriptions just to know where you are.
Oh, thank goodness. I love those games, but I need a wiki open just to play them.
Exactly. But on the other side of that coin, it's not a movie. It's not one of those games where you put the controller down for 20 minutes to watch a cutscene. It uses micro-narratives.
Characterization through gameplay. That's an interesting phrase from the source. How do you do that without words?
You feel Kate's rage in the weight of her attacks. You feel her grief in the music. It's show, don't tell, but weaponized.
Let's talk about the look. The screenshots here, it's all pixel art. And I can hear some listeners already thinking, oh, another retro indie game.
And the sources warn against that. They call it high fidelity pixel art. It's not just retro for retro's sake. It's about the details. They use something called micro animations.
Give me an example. What's a micro animation?
Okay, so if Kate draws her fire sword near water, the game actually calculates the light reflection on individual water droplets in the background, or the grass bends under your specific footfalls.
So the world feels reactive, not just a static backdrop.
Precisely. And that visual style is paired with the audio. We're looking at a mix of epic orchestral and synthwave.
Which on paper sounds like a train wreck. Knights and synthesizers.
It does, but it works because it's dynamic. When you're exploring, it's all mysterious and orchestral. But the second you hit combat boom, the synthwave kicks in. It's pure adrenaline.
So the music is actually cueing your brain on how to feel.
It's designed to regulate your heart rate. It tells you, okay, focus, which brings us to the core of the game. The Dance of Death.
The Dance of Death. That's what one of the guys calls the combat.
And dance is the perfect word. You cannot stand still. The whole system is built around mixing four elements: fire, ice, thunder, earth, with your swordplay.
So this isn't just press X to win. You can't just mash buttons.
No. If you button mash, you die instantly. Let me walk you through a 2-second combo from the advanced guide.
Okay, go for it.
You jump, you have to stay airborne. You cast an ice spell to freeze an enemy. That's your crowd control. Then you use a fire dash to phase right through their body.
Whoa.
And then you spin around and hit them with a thunder attack for a critical backstab.
That sounds like a lot for 2 seconds. That's like playing the piano.
It requires a flow state. The AI is designed to force it. They don't wait their turn. They encircle you. And if you use the same move twice, they adapt and punish you for it.
So you have to be creative to survive.
Exactly. And this whole philosophy really comes to a head with the boss fights. The devs call them moving puzzles.
I was reading about the Ash Gatekeeper. this giant knight with a shield that covers his entire body. You just can't hit him.
If you try to brute force it, your sword just bounces off. The puzzle is patience. You have to wait for him to charge his one heavy attack. That is the only moment he lowers his guard.
That's some high-stakes timing.
In that split second, you have to dash behind him, freeze his legs so he can't turn, and just unload everything you have.
That sounds so stressful, but so satisfying.
Oh, it gets worse. Or better. Let's talk about the Shadow Twins.
Ooh, the dual boss fight. I always hate these. Managing two enemies at once is a nightmare.
And these two are the gatekeepers for the entire mid-game. They attack at lightning speed. But the real twist is the Berserk mechanic. If you kill one, the other absorbs their power and becomes, well, basically unkillable.
So you can't just focus fire on one to make the fight easier?
Nope. You have to damage them both equally. You have to whittle both health bars down at the same time until the very end and then finish them together. It forces you to multitask under extreme pressure.
I see the source calls this sweet stress.
Yeah.
I like that.
It's that feeling of overcoming the impossible.
Now, all this happens in a Metroidvania structure, which, for anyone who doesn't know, means a huge interconnected map.
Right, a maze that slowly opens up.
But the number one complaint I always have is backtracking. Walking all the way back to the start of the game for one door, how does Emberbane solve that?
Again, by respecting the 2026 gamer, they knew we don't have patience for that. So there's a generous fast travel system and a map that's actually, you know, readable.
A readable map in a Metroidvania. What a concept.
It shouldn't be, but it is. But also, the backtracking itself feels fresh because the areas are so distinct. You go from crystal caves to flying mechanical cities. The journey feels like part of the story, not a commute.
Okay, let's pivot to the technical stuff. The game feel. Because this is where I think that masterpiece claim really comes from.
This is my favorite part of the research. This is the secret sauce.
The sources all highlight a mechanic called hit stop. Can you explain this? Because when I read about it, it just sounded like a glitch, like the game was freezing.
It does sound counterintuitive, doesn't it? Hit stop is a frame-by-frame thing. When your sword lands a heavy blow, the entire game animation, sound, everything pauses for exactly 3 frames.
3 frames is, what, a tiny fraction of a second?
It's almost unnoticeable consciously, but your brain feels it.
So why do it? Doesn't that break the flow?
It creates the flow. Think about it. If you cut through warm butter, there's no resistance. But if you chop a log, the axe bites in, it sticks for a moment. That stick is the impact.
So the game is tricking your brain into feeling weight and resistance.
Precisely. Without hit stop, the combat would feel floaty, like you're waving a toy sword. With it, it feels crunchy. It has weight. And they layer that with dynamic screen shake.
It's not just random shaking.
No. Fire attacks have this soft, wavy shake. Thunder attacks cause a sharp, sudden jerk. Even the camera has personality.
That is just an insane level of detail. It's basically psychological manipulation.
All good game design is. But there's one more mechanic that really messes with your psychology. The soul system.
This sounded familiar. Like in Dark Souls, when you die, you drop your experience points. You have to go back and get them.
Right, standard stuff. It creates stakes. But Emberbane adds a twist. If you die again before getting your souls back, they don't just vanish. They turn into a shadow enemy.
Wait, so I have to fight myself?
You have to fight a shadowy version of yourself that uses your own moves just to get your currency back.
That is just mean. That's kicking you when you're already down.
It's brilliant. It forces you to literally confront your own failure. It turns your mistakes into the next challenge you have to overcome.
I can see why people get obsessed. Okay, but let's get back to the story, because there are some really deep mysteries here.
The lore community is obsessed with the royal daughter theory.
This gave me goosebumps when I read about it. Walk us through it.
So you find these hidden manuscripts that talk about the king who originally banned the elements. The normal reading is that Cade is just some random person who got powers. But if you collect every single item in the game, a 40-hour job, you unlock a secret cutscene.
And what's in the scene?
Cade finds a royal portrait in a ruined palace. The camera just lingers on it. And the resemblance between her and the king is, well, it's undeniable. The implication is that Cade isn't just an outlaw. She's his daughter.
Which completely recontextualizes the entire game. It's not a rebellion. It's a family tragedy.
Exactly. She's killing her own family. And that leads to the other big mystery, the soul merchant.
The creepy shopkeeper guy.
Yeah. He's the only one who seems to remember the golden age before the ban. He knows about this ash curse. He seems to know everything. And the source asks this terrifying question. if he knows the truth? Why is he helping you?
Or is he helping you?
That's the thing. Maybe you're just a pawn in a much bigger game.
Speaking of breaking the game, we have to talk about the speedrunners. They found something the developers didn't intend to put in right.
The infinite dash cancel, a classic case of players outsmarting the code.
What is it?
Players found that if you jump on the third frame of a dash animation, the physics engine just glitches out and it doubles your acceleration. You basically launch across the screen.
Usually a developer would patch that out immediately. That's skipping content.
Right. But the devs at Hamboo, they saw it and they just left it in. They basically said, you know what? That looks cool. It raises the skill ceiling. Keep it.
That shows a lot of confidence in your game.
It shows they get their community. They realized that for top tier players, this bug was actually a feature. It was fun.
So, bottom line, let's look at the comparison chart. How does Emberbane stack up against the giants?
Well, compared to Dead Cells, which is kind of the gold standard, Emberbane has a much deeper, more cohesive story, even if Dead Cells has a bit more weapon variety.
And what about something like Celeste? That game is revered for its emotional weight.
The comparison there is the music and the emotional impact. Apparently, Emberbane matches it, which is incredibly high praise.
It is. But we need to give a warning. The difficulty rating.
It's a 5 out of 5. The sources use the word ruthless.
Is that a relaxing Sunday afternoon game?
Probably not. But they make a key distinction. It's ruthless, but not unfair. When you die, you know it was your fault. You just have to learn the pattern.
And value-wise, how long is it?
About 15 hours for the main story. But you're looking at over 40 if you want to find everything and unlock that secret ending.
So, to circle back to our mission.
Yeah.
How did this small studio pull this off?
I think it's focus. They didn't have the budget for huge cutscenes or celebrity voice actors, so they poured every single resource into those 3 frames of hit stop, into the micro animations, into making the jump feel perfect.
It proves you don't need $1 billion to make something that feels incredible.
And there's a lesson in the game's design, too. It teaches you that failure, dying, losing your souls, it's just data. It's part of the process.
Don't fear failure. Just dash cancel through it.
Exactly. Standing still is death. You have to keep moving.
I'm still stuck on that soul merchant, though.
It's the one thread that's left dangling, isn't it?
If he knows the truth about this curse, and Kate is killing these so-called false gods, is it possible that the villains she's hunting are actually the ones holding a much worse threat at bay?
So by winning the game,
are you actually dooming the world?
That is a terrifying thought to end on. And maybe the setup for a sequel.
Or it just changes how you see everything.
Yeah.
Something to think about. That's it for our deep dive into Emberbane.
Thanks for listening.
We'll catch you next one.